And I think there are a lot of misconceptions when people watch what goes on in the movies and stuff, or CNN, or they think money in the US is easy. No, it's not. You're going to work for it. Nobody gives you handouts. And then the other thing that sort of helped me is that, you know, I say a dollar is a dollar. So whether you're cleaning toilets, whether you're like a trader in Wall Street, at the end of it, a dollar is a dollar. It's the same strength. It looks the same. It doesn't matter where you got it from. So what the kind of work you do, you shouldn't care what people think about you. Don't ever care. Personally, I worked in a furniture factory. This is in the UK. I worked in Campbell Soup, picking out fat with my fingers. I worked for like 2 days. I quit because it was breaking my back. I've worked in all sorts of...
is Assorted Immigrant Stories podcast. My name is Zenith Mwangahamambamalao, and I am your host. And for those of you that are stopping by for the very first time, this is a podcast about immigrant journeys, the things I and others wish we knew. We have interviews and share conversations with immigrants from diverse backgrounds and countries as they share their own immigration stories. We explore struggles, triumphs, and cultural adjustments. We discuss identity, belonging, and community, and we also highlight successes and contributions to both American society and back home, and that's wherever home might be. We also review some books that touch on the immigrant story. So don't forget to rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Welcome, everybody. On today's episode, I have Mr. Joseph Chikota, who is also from Zambia, just like me. And today he's going to grace with us as well with the story of how he won the green card and how his transition was. All right. Welcome, Mr. Chikota. And can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello, listeners. My name is Joseph Chikota. I come from Patamato in Luanshya, the only city where copper was discovered in Zambia.
I actually never knew that because I was born in Luanshya, and all I know is as a kid, my dad wanted to go to the copper belt so much from the village, which he did. He went to Luanshya, and I just remember him working for Baluba Mine. I didn't know copper was discovered there. Very interesting. So tell us a bit about your childhood in Patamato.
Okay, it's interesting you mentioned Baluba. Baluba actually was known for cobalt way back in the 70s anyway. Yes, it was one mine that produced cobalt. So Patamato, that's where I was born. I was one of many kids. We used to call ourselves KK11. My dad came from a village from somewhere in Pika where dad had passed away. I think went up to standard three standard three was sub whatever primary school level. Then nobody could afford his uniform. So that's how he made his journey as a 15-year-old from hitchhiking from Pika all the way up to Kitwe because he had that there were mines, they were recruiting. So in Kitwe, that's how he did the tailoring for 2 years. Then heard they were recruiting, underground mine workers in Luanshya. He trekked to Luanshya. That's where he met my mom. My mom was 16 and they got married. And that's how I was born in Luanshya. I was not born in Patamato. I was born in Ron before. Then we moved. After that, we moved to Patamato. Yeah. I was born in Ron Hospital. Yeah.
That's interesting because everything you're saying sounds so familiar to me. And even the stories, I guess it was the story of our parents during their times. That was like their America or their whatever country or places that people are going to, and they were trekking to the copper belt. Because one of the things I remember is how diverse it was. When I look back, for example, what tribe are you? You said you came from Mpika, so like, are you Bemba or like what tribe are you? What tribe is Chikota?
No, it's Bisa. It's Bisa. But interestingly, see, when I think there was some in the years a few years, like maybe 20 years, I used to Google Chikota Chikota. You find the Chikota were Japanese, Chikotas who are, yes, German, UK, US, but they're not related. They're just like, it's a name that exists in other parts of the world. So even in Zambia, I think there's Chikotis, those are different. There's Chikotes, they're different. And then there's, I think there's a Chikota somewhere. So yeah, but my dad came from Piga. He was one of two siblings. His sister was the other sibling, so she never carried the Chikota name. So most of the Chikotas in our related to me all came through my dad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So, Bisa, how do you say hello in Bisa?
Hey. No, because my dad spoke Bisa. We spoke Bemba most of the time, but I think if I remember, I'll let you know. I'll drop it in later. You caught me off guard on that one.
So what was it like playing with other kids? Just give us a sense of your childhood, going to school while living in Impatamato.
Yeah, I think I was one of those kids that just watched. I didn't take part in most of the things. So most of the times I would just watch whether it's people playing soccer. Actually, I was never played soccer as a kid. They thought that I was not good at it. So I ended up just watching. Of course, we played the Chidunu and all the other games. Fulama, if you remember those. We did all those kind of stuff. But one of the things that I think I did a lot that was unplanned, there was a gap in my primary school years. I spent the time with guys. I used to go, you know, in the fields, whether it was Kandolo, whether it was Ifisali. We had some guy who used to go hunting with his dogs. He'd go for rabbits, for impombo and all kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think when I look back then, we were young. I think we were maybe 12. You'd walk for like 10 minutes and there'll be animals nearby. So back then, you know, animals existed. So I spent 2 years following some guys who'd go hunting for some of the smaller animals. Yeah. Wild animals. Yeah.
So, and you say 2 years. So you actually stopped going to school for 2 years.
I did. It was never planned, but it just happened. And this was actually when I was in primary school. I was really bad. I used to sit in Group D right at the back. So I was really the worst from the first round from grade 1 to grade 7. And I failed. It was not surprising. Then after that, I just stayed at home, just played Mingo. That's when I think it's more like lost years. But I think one of the things I learned from there is that 2 years into doing nothing, a distant cousin, distant husband to my cousin, he's the one that came and he was a teacher. He came and said, "Hey, come to my class in grade 6, and I'll give you a challenge. You're gonna sit next to." There was a guy who was a footballer. He said, "You're gonna have to sit next to him, and you have to do better than him." So that's how I go back to school. And interestingly, also I started school when I was 9. So the time I was finishing my grade 12, my wife had actually finished her PhD and was working. So I started school very, very late. Yep.
My goodness, that's interesting. So you sit with this guy that you have to do better than. And did you do better than him?
I did. I think I remember it was in the third term. You know, in Zambia, you know, terms are from January to December. Third term, I think it would have been like September time. We started and I sat next to him. End of year exams, I think I was second in class. So we went into grade 7. I don't remember what happened in grade 7 anyway, but when we had the grade 7 exams, I was the first in the school. That was a primary school, Nkrumasho Primary School. Then from there, went to Nkrumasho Secondary School. So from there, I think the trajectory changed. So those 2 years I spent in the compound, and this somebody snatching me out of an abyss, was really was something that changed my life. And actually, one of the other things that happened those 2 years, there was some man who used to come from DRC to come and visit my parents. He used to do some crafts, you know, some of these wooden crafts. He actually came, I nearly ended up in Congo. Because it's actually my parents that I was very good at craft. Could I go to Congo? My parents agreed. I don't know what happened. So I would have disappeared into Congo. So, you know, but there you go. But as you know, I mean, Eastern Congo and Zambia are, you know, people go back and forth. So it would have, for my parents, it's like, you know, Congo is just across the Lwapula River. You know, I could have gone there and, you know, it wasn't like child trafficking like today, but it would have been something, you know, would have changed my life. But instead, I went back to school. That's I found where I find myself today.
Wow. Yeah. And I know for high school, you went to one of the great, great academic schools in Zambia, Hillcrest, right?
it was fun. It was fun. Actually, what was interesting was when I finished grade 9, I was actually, I don't like flaunting the exams, it's not like showing off. I actually was the best student at the secondary school where I was. I was selected to go to Hillcrest, but I would also apply to Mpelembe. So before going to Hillcrest, I went to visit Mpelembe, submit. I think you applied before the results came out. So then after that, I went to tour. I saw Mpelembe. Back then, Mpelembe had just been opened, like a couple of years into opening. So it was great. Then when I come back to the school, the headmaster for the secondary school, the junior secondary school, he said, by the way, I heard you went to Mpelembe. Don't go to Mpelembe. Hillcrest is better. I'd never been to Hillcrest. So that's how I ditched Mpelembe and went to Hillcrest. We were selected, yeah. Yeah. So it was funny. We went on the train, anticipating. The train stopped in the night. We got out. There was sand. We had to walk from the train, from little like side train station all the way to Hillcrest. In the sand, we arrived at school. Didn't look like I expected Mpelembe. Mpelembe was like, it was like pristine. I spent the years at Hillcrest, and that's where I finished my grade 12.
Wow, yeah. That's interesting. So you did, those train rides, and that was every term you went with the train rides to school, right?
I did go with the train. I did go. Although I think at the time my dad didn't have a great job. He was in the mines anyway. So my older brother is the one I used to provide my transport. And so I would commute. Yeah, I would go every term, commute to Livingstone and then back. Time went by very, very quickly. Actually, one of the things that came out of, I think, my having missed out on primary school, my English was really not good. When I went to the secondary school where we were, I think we had a teacher for maybe one term. I think second term, the teacher left. So by the time I was getting to Hillcrest, really one of the subjects that I wasn't good at was English. So when I got to Hillcrest, I joined the Rotaract Club. That's what I think part of a Rotary Club. And I was the vice president. So what I did, we used to receive the books from Reader's Digest. So I took 30 boxes of books and I taught myself I have to pass English at least with a 2. So I spent the next 3 years like reading stuff just to improve my English. So to just try and play catch up. Yeah.
So I hope people are listening to these nuggets, how you can turn your things around. You can be sitting in the back row in the D row, but things can certainly turn around. Okay, so you finished high school, and from there, did you go to college right away, or how did that work out for you?
Yeah, so I think initially, actually going back to primary school, I didn't see the point in going to school. So it's just like go and learn and come back. But when I got to, I think when I was at Hillcrest, one of the things that I heard was that, whether it is true or not, that there was a Zambian working for NASA. It's like, oh, what's NASA? So I think that is what drove me. I think that was when I got to Hillcrest the first time. It's like, oh, NASA. You read up, it's like, oh, you mean a Zambian can get to NASA? So there is a path. So from then on, my motto was, let me do as best as I can to have as many chances so that if any opportunity comes into whatever form or shape, I'll be able to like, at least if they pick 2 people, I'll be the second person. So from then on, I try to push myself to just try and work hard. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you made it to the A-levels at Mpelembe, right?
I did. So when I finished at Hillcrest, I went to UNSA for 1 year. I went to Mpelembe during the first round of selection. I mean, it was very stiff. Back then, you had sons, kids, daughters of ministers of, in the calendar era. So not only were you competing academically, of course, there's no way they're going to leave the child of a minister if they're on the same application. So we ended up with competing not only academically, but also because, you come from nowhere. Your dad is a nobody. So you have to sort of push yourself. Yeah. So went to Mpelembe. I think the rest of us, some of us were given courses we didn't want. So because they had to give you a course. So I didn't want to take what I took. So I ended up with a scholarship at UNSA for 1 year, ZSM scholarship. Then second time, I went back to Mpelembe again. That's how I got through, yeah. you know, so never give up. Remember, I started school at 9. So you learn to play catch up. You never give up.
That is absolutely right. So UNSA that he's talking about is the University of Zambia. It was one of, well, there's quite a number of them now, but, you know, back then it was like University of Zambia and I think CBU University, and very hard to get in as well, very competitive during that time, I know. And then ZCCM that he's talking about is also Zambia Consolidated Copper Mines. On the Copper Belt, they did have sponsorship for students, whether it was to University of Zambia or even abroad. And that's kind of like the path that Mr. Chikota took. Okay, so from Mpelembe, so you now went to Europe.
I went to UK to go and study. I went and did electronics, electrical engineering at University of Manchester. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So how did America come in the picture? We're trying to figure out how did you find yourself in New York, New York?
Well, I think it was, so way back when I went to UK, then I think maybe a year later, there was the Clinton campaign. I watched that religiously. I think I was UK back then. It was like the debates were just amazing. I think I followed every single campaign, every planning and stuff. So that captivated my interest in the US. So while there, between the first and second year, I came to the US under like work student exchange visa. To come and work in the US. I worked in Maryland for 3 months, made some money. The second year, I came back again. I think that back then, I'd captivated interest in the US after watching the elections, because back then, of course, Clinton was the president. So that then sort of had my ears opened up to the US to the extent that when I went to visit Zambia in 94, on the way back to UK, there used to be Zambia Airways, by the way. They would say Mishima, yes. So I think at the airport, I picked up a Daily Mail, or maybe it would have been, I think, at the airport before I flew back to UK. There was a card out in Daily Mail saying, get a free immigration visa to the US. So I applied for the green card back in 94 and got it like in 95. Yeah.
The green card lottery, the DV lottery, people, and we're in season right now. It opened on October 2nd, closes on November 5th. We have somebody who won it back in 1994. You were lucky. One try.
Yep. It's one of those things like, you know, let's do our best, apply. Like back then, there was no easy internet. When I was at University of Manchester, to send an email, you go to the computer department. I think it was engineering department. You'd go to the computer room. You go and log into a terminal. You send an email today. 2 days later, you come and check for a reply. So there was no way of going to the internet to go and apply for the form. So I filled in the form. There was a company. There was like a lawyer that was advertising. So you fill in the form. You send to them. They post. And then 95, I think it was August 95. I got a letter back saying, oh, you've won, and they sent me the reference number. So the rest is, he took it from there. So for me, it was easy, but I think it's being prepared. Just like my parents moved, my dad moved from the village, you know, you plan, you execute, opportunities come, you jump on them, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the challenges as well is people not doing it right. Because, you know, as soon as it opens, people are in a hurry. I know for myself, I did it wrong for so many years. Like my picture was never right. Now that I understand the instructions, I'm like, oh my God. And I'll do the application. It would say success, but I used to smile on my pictures. And you're not supposed to do that. So it's interesting. You did use a service. And I do tell people that, yes, there are some genuine services out there where someone can charge a small fee to apply for you. The application is free. It is free if you do it yourself and you understand it. But if you don't and somebody can help you, they might charge you $5. But obviously, you have to be careful, because then it creates a window for scammers as well to take advantage of that space, right? Because they could take advantage of someone who doesn't know and maybe even keep the numbers and say, pay me so much if you want to retrieve it. So you obviously did it right the first time, and you were, you positioned yourself, preparation, that's the key. You put yourself in a position where, you know, there's no being disqualified because of some picture or your name or your birthday and something like that is wrong. Okay, that's wonderful. So what was the process like for you? Because you were in the UK at the time, but you can apply from any part of the world as long as your country of birth is eligible. So did you do the process from the UK?
No, I did. No, back then I was purely just a Zambian citizen. So I applied based on my Zambian qualification. So that's how I applied, yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. But did you have to travel to Zambia to do the interviews, or did you have to do the interviews?
No. When I did the interview, I did them in the UK. Because you can designate which country you want to do the interview. Even back then, you could decide where to do the interview. Yeah. You can designate a specific location. Yeah. And then just going back to your comment on the application process and stuff. I think besides it being, it's not complicated, it's straightforward. There's something in the, I'm hoping with the Zambezi drying up, maybe some things will change. So right now I'm helping a friend, on Sunday, I sent him the requirements, very, very straightforward. I said, this is somebody who's been, he's wanted to come. So I sent him the instructions, very simple stuff. I just said, forget the photo, just send me your personal details. Today is Thursday. If it's important, I don't know why anybody would take this long. It's a very simple one page. Your passport, date of birth, highest education attained, your passport number, if you got a spouse.
They don't even ask passport number anymore.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it just says, just a date of birth, and then your spouse, kids, today, Thursday. It's 4 days. So I don't know. I don't know. I know immigration or migration is not for everyone, but if somebody really says they want to, which a lot of people do, but I think, I think Zambians, we tend to spend a lot of time debating things, but the things that matter or things that can actually help us, whether it's getting a scholarship, reduced fees or access to funding for those entrepreneurs, we don't do that. We tend to want somebody to do it for us. So I told this gentleman, I am busy. I'll help you. They're a lot less busy than I am. But I don't know why people don't prioritize things which you say are important. So there you go. That's on the application, yeah.
It is a very interesting dynamic because that's the reason I share it too, because I recognize that it's not for everybody. Not everybody should be here. And now people have more choices. There's so many countries you could go to today. If you're looking for something different than our own country. But that's the challenge, because you have a group of people who are saying, well, I want out of this, or this is not working, and how do I get there? And you say, well, there's this opportunity. You can. And when I read there are two ladies that I follow, they're a bit more out there. They do lives. I watched one lady that had completed a live with all the instructions, and people were still asking in the questions, how do I do this? Where do I go? And I'm like, if you listen to the video, all the information is in there. But it's like sometimes some people wanting you to do everything, all the way, you can do this part. I've given you the website. I've given you what you need. Here are the instructions. Read them. Take your time. You have 1 month. But I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, I share it for those who are, is somebody who's going to do it, they'll do it. And someone who's not, will not. But it's interesting that it's usually the people who say they want, and then they'll ask you, so what am I supposed to do? Where am I supposed to go? I know last year I was supposed to do it for one of my aunties, and she told me that her children were in boarding school, so she couldn't get the pictures. I said, well, prepare the pictures so you can be prepared for this year. Well, we are here now. It's a year later, and there's nothing. So there we go.
And actually, there was somebody, I would encourage them to do it. They've been asking I need to bring my relatives here. Last week I told them, I said, you know what? The DV starts this week. I think it's actually today the 3rd. No, tomorrow the 4th. That's when it opens, I think.
It opened on the 2nd at 12 p.m.
The form is not open. That was the announcement. Then the form to fill in, the form was not there yesterday. The form, I think, opens, I think, the 4th. Anyway. You can look it up. So this person, I sent them the link. I said, you know what? Here's the link. You go and apply, and they've not come back. This is a person who asked me when I spoke to him and said, it's like, oh, I'm trying to bring somebody. I said, okay, you can. Oh, October 2nd. Oh, yeah, begins October 2nd. You're right, yeah. October 2nd, So, yeah, I mean, it's people can apply, the people that say they want to, but I don't know why people just don't, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting.
Anyway, though, so. I'm always afraid that one day it's going to stop, you know, with all these politics and immigration. Like, one day.
Yeah.
And I say, look, Nigeria is not on the list because it speaks to the Nigerian hustle, and that hustle, we don't have it.
The Nigerian but you know what's smart? Like, I mean, the Nigerians who apply Zambians, you know that? Is this smart? They're very smart. They're smart. Well, actually, so anyway, somebody probably kill me. So there was a colleague, I'm not going to mention his name anyway, or the country came from, is somewhere from Europe anyway. He applied. He actually, people, you see, what some people would do, some people sell IDs, or some people apply under multiple names. I know two people that applied under multiple, which is illegal, you should not do it. So they right. then what they see this person ran into trouble. So they applied under several names. So one of those names came up. The name that came up is not their real name, somebody else. So what they had to do, they had to go to their country, they're European, they're European, to go and change the name, legally change the name to that name in that country before they could then go and process the green card. They went and changed the name legally, changed on their passport. When they came to now process the U.S. says they declined. So they were declined, actually. They were, their application, less qualification, selection was disqualified. So, I mean, I think just do it once a year, do it every year. I mean, chances for Zambia are really high. Zambia is, people don't apply, but people always want to, you know, what they want to come into the U.S., but they don't want to apply. I mean, if you want to come to the U.S., for those who want to, just give it a try. When you get it, you get to get yourself, your spouse, your siblings, your parents, everyone gets, you know. Then what I tell people is like, you know what, don't say you don't like it. At least get it. Let those relatives, your kids or your spouse who wants to, let them come. You can decline. Or bring your parents and you stay there. So I'm saying, I mean, be a bridge to other people. If you are able to apply, then decline it if you don't like it. But let those who want to come, with your kids, especially for school, let the kids come. So I'm saying.
That's my thing. Like, you know, there's so many advantages to that. Especially if you want your kids maybe to go out of school for college, or you want your kids to go to grad school, or for yourself, maybe want to go to grad school. You come here as a resident, you slash out so many costs, because as an international student, you pay three times the amount. It's just so much easier. And then you can travel. You don't have these headaches of, oh, if I travel, I need to get a new visa. You need to go to the embassy. Maybe they deny you. You don't have any of these headaches. You just come straight, and it's as if you shave off 10, 15, 20 years of struggle before, because that's how long it can take for those of us who came with a different visa. It's very difficult, and it can take a very, very long time. Okay, so you win the green card. You do the interview from the UK. And then did you move to New York right away?
Nope. I did not. I stayed in the UK for many years, for more than 10 years. I did. Yeah, so what we did, we had to comply to the requirements. So we used to travel. We spent a lot of time back and forth and back and forth. I mean, US was, we had to comply. We had to be here most of the time. So we ended up spending a lot of money back and forth, doing the tax returns every year. Because I was working there for a U.S. company, so we stayed at work. I stayed there. We only moved eventually when the kids were like older, so we could actually settle in one place.
Okay, and that's what I was going to ask. I was going to say, at the time you were applying, so it was you, your wife, and your two children.
No, it was just me. We're not married yet then.
Oh, you were not married yet. So, but you were able to, okay, well, I mean, once you get it.
Yeah, they qualified. Yeah, they qualified automatically. Yeah,
yeah, like
qualify,
in a different way.
Yep.
Okay, so you went back and forth, because I know, I think for a permanent resident, you can't stay out of the U.S. for more than 6 months. So people do that back and forth. Like you come.
Then yeah, you I mean, I think you can get the reentry permit. You get it for 2 years. I think you're getting once. Then, I mean, you can decide what point to get it, you know, and then, of course, you have to maintain your presence here. So it becomes very expensive. But it's something that, you know, if it's something that you want to do and you can afford the money, you know, you can do it. One of the things that I tell people to do, like, look, okay, you get it, you can't decide, and it's too expensive. There's nothing that would stop you. I mean, it's not illegal to, you come here for 3 months, you use that to, you can generate income here. People love iPhones in Zambia. You can come buy 20 iPhones, go to Zambia, get them there legally, sell them. Right now, I think in Zambia, the iPhones is, I think it's 40, 50% more brand new in the stores. So if you can, you know, if you can charge less, you can actually use the opportunity to generate income to be able to be here and there and help your family, help your kids. There's some people that I know who come here, work for a few months, raise enough money for the school kids for the whole year, pay the fees back in Zambia, then go stay in Zambia, then come back again. You know, so you comply to the 6 month requirement, but also be able to work, because once you get a green card, you are legally allowed to work. You can be here, work for 6 months, make enough money, pay for your fees, pay for your profession, and then go to Zambia for a few months and then come back. So you can actually use the opportunity to try, you know, ease in the movement of your relatives. Of course, I think some of the more resilient people are the people from West Africa. I know somebody who came here, I think 3 years ago, they left their family in West Africa, left the kids, were young, mm-hmm. came here, worked in some of these, like, you know, the epileptic centers in New York, and worked their way. Right now, they're in second year doing a PhD. And their family, all of them just came last month. The kids are in schools. The spouse is allowed to work. And off you go. So there are ways, there are paths to actually some of these things, just like resilience, plan, patience. You can do it in a very, very legal way and establish yourself, and there you go. So I was talking to them yesterday. The kids are in school. The spouse is working or doing a master's as well. I mean, it's you can actually do it. It's not complicated. I mean, there are ways. People have done it. It's not a new. That's why there's even a movie created. It exists. There's a lot of advice. You can do it. You know.
Right. What's the movie called?
Actually, the one it says. I think green card is the other way around. I think it's buying a green card, marrying out of convenience. Have you watched it? Have you watched Green Card?
I've seen it. It's like South African and in America.
Green card? No, you go watch it.
Yeah. There's another one I watched, but it was about the same. But it was.
Yeah. It was. Okay. Yeah. But I mean, what I'm saying is, there are a lot of course, there are a lot of scammers. But I think if you go to the DV website, you can do it yourself. But if you can't do it, I mean, there are people that have tried to help you. You give them stuff, they will not do it. You go like, you know what, pay me, I'll do it for you. They don't want to do it. It's like, you know what, here's a link. You go do it. I'm not going to spend my time. So, yeah. Yeah, again, it's not for everyone. It's for people who want to move. But for me, if I have to go back to Zambia, I have to go back to Mpatamato. I'm not going to Lusaka. I never came from Lusaka. Just like my dad never came from, you know, he didn't come from Luanshya. He came from Pika. So if I have to go back, I have to go to Luanshya anyway. So
I know. Just like me, Chilabombwe, my hometown.
And people have run away. You're from Luanshya.
That's you true. Run away.
Don't change.
Okay. So I want to know about your transition in New York. So which year did you come? And at that point, did you come as a family? And what it was like just to transition to the lifestyle here in America?
Okay. In between, 1995 and when we moved, I mean, we'd been coming back and forth anyway. So the kids hadn't been here. We'd been here. We'd been to, I think when we first came, I think just like do a tour of, just a tour of the states. I think we did 27 states in 2 weeks. We landed in New York, went to the Twin Towers, and then from there drove west and, you know, came back through DC, Philly, and then came back to New York and flew back. So we've been to every single, nearly 27 states is a lot. And then, of course, before coming, I decided that I was going to come with job transfer because I worked for the U.S. company. So that if things didn't work, I can still go back to the U.K. anyway for the same company. So when I came, it was a job transfer. My manager wanted me to move straight into New York City. Actually, I refused. I wanted to, because I like to like come out of the house, walk around and go back in. So I didn't have enough money to go live in New York City. I have a mansion to be able to walk around it. So I came in, moving into Westchester. So I've been in New York ever since.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Wonderful. And did you find a community there, like a Zambian community or another community?
No, there was no community. Actually, the place that I moved in, I think they were out of the 9,000 homes, I think. Well, whatever, whether it was 9,000 inhabitants or 14,000, there was only like five African families anyway. So,
yeah. You guys make your small community?
Yeah, I think it's sort of hard to adapt because I think, I mean, amongst our like kids, friends, parents, my daughter, I think I'd... well, I'll try and get it right because she'll listen to it. She'll go like, no, that was not right. She had a Japanese friend, Chinese, Korean, Pakistani, Indian, Mexican, just about, you know, just like the Muslims, the Jewish, the all the different faiths, the Buddhists. So my kids actually grew up in a very, I think it's a good environment because my kids interacted. Even today, those friends are still their friends. Even my son, I think he still has 15 of his friends from first grade. They're all very, very diverse, male, female, different, the Jewish, the whatever. They still have maintained friendships. So we integrated into the community that we found, because you're not going to find Zambians everywhere. And Zambia is a very tiny population. It's a tiny 20 million. It's a very, even the US is a small community. So you have to learn to adapt. Just like Zen, when your parent, your dad came from where he came from, he had to adapt to Luansha. So I'm saying.
Right.
So
right.
You have to make that your home because for your kids, that's a home. Their friends are from there. So you have to try and adapt much as you don't abandon your culture. You have to make home where you are, adapt, bring your culture. Otherwise, you'd be feeling homesick every day. So, yeah. So, and then the other thing is I spent a lot of time traveling for work. So most of the time I would fly out of New York to other states. So I didn't have a lot of time at the weekends or in the evenings to interact. Yeah.
And I know one of the things you did as well was take your kids a lot to Zambia as well as they were growing up. I mean, now they're adults.
Yeah. So one of the things that my wife and I decided earlier on was that we're going to take our kids, each child would go to Zambia every 2 years, at least once. So when my son was one, I think when he was two, we went to Zambia. When my daughter was one, I went with her for a month. So they've been to Zambia, you know, they've been to Zambia every 2 years from when they were born, yeah. So okay, they know their cousins, they know their aunties and the uncles, yeah.
Yeah. No, just very important, just to stay connected, because as you're adapting here, they're having friends here, but they also have a sense of where they come from. Mm-hmm. Now, that was wonderful. That was wonderful that you had that. Okay. So we're going to start winding down, but any final thoughts, you know, for people who are trying to apply and just the adapting piece, jobs, because I think one of the things people struggle with is when they come and sometimes you may have to work, do a job that you didn't even maybe even think about, which doesn't even maybe cross something that you studied. How do people adjust with that?
Okay. To that I'll say, you know, money never grows on trees. It doesn't matter the currency. It never grows on trees. And then the other thing is that what I mean is that, you know, you're going to work for it. You have to work. And I think there are a lot of misconceptions when people watch what goes on in the movies and stuff, or CNN, or they think money in the US is easy. No, it's not. You're going to work for it. Nobody gives you handouts. And then the other thing that sort of helped me is that, you know, I say a dollar is a dollar. So whether you're cleaning toilets, whether you're like a trader in Wall Street, at the end of it, a dollar is a dollar. It's the same strength. It looks the same. It doesn't matter where you got it from. So what the kind of work you do, you shouldn't care what people think about you. Don't ever care. Personally, I worked in a furniture factory This is in the UK. I worked in Campbell Soup, picking out fat with my fingers. I worked for like 2 days. I quit because it was breaking my back. I've worked in all sorts of places, Burger King, McDonald's, Pizza Hut, you know, KFC. I worked in a hotel cleaning. It doesn't matter. You know, once you end up with the money is the money. So when you come into the US, you're not going to find free money. So be very deliberate and need to plan what you're going to do, whether it comes with a green card or to visit or whichever way. You have to know that you need to have shelter and food. So if you work in McDonald's or wherever you work, for as long as you have some shelter of some kind and some food, you're good for a start. Just for yourself before start caring for another person. If you get a green card, have one person, you know, everyone, I think, needs to travel. Let others go back. You establish a base, then coming, all of you, three of you, two, struggling anyway. Establish a base. New York is glamorous. It's expensive. If you move somewhere in the Midwest or in the South, it's cheaper, but you'd be isolated. You won't find many Zambians. So I think you have to, like, do your research. And again, I mean, Zambians are very, very bad at supporting others. That we know, those of us who've been here. Your testimony to that. So Zambians are very bad at supporting others. There are a few things that knowledge that exists. Reach out to the Nigerian communities because they'll tell you which college to go and work for so that kids can go for free. They'll tell you which good school districts that are cheap. So the Nigerian network is really, really good. Find somebody reliable. They'll give you some hints. If you go to Zambians, we are very good at being... we have too many PhDs. I think we don't help. It's not very good. So yeah, Nigerian communities, West African communities are very helpful, or the Kenyans. So I think plan, find people that can help you with information, but don't expect people to accommodate and feed you for free. No. Don't sink somebody's boat. If somebody starts to help you, don't pile your problems on them. Get the advice, have a strong backbone, and try and stand for yourself.
Wow, that's wonderful. Great information you just gave us there. And I keep saying this, and you just said it. Yes, connect with your community, but make sure to connect with other communities, because you will find out things. You'll be like, oh, there's this, there's that, oh, there's even that. That's how you find out. Because many things as well, I found out from West Africans and Kenyans, actually, like you mentioned. You know, I didn't get it from my people. And then I was like, okay, you know, you start realizing, well, I need to move a different way. If I'm going to get here, I need to move this path. So connect with the community, but connect with other communities. All right. So as we're transitioning, you are the CEO of Driven Technologies. Tell us what you're working on right now.
Okay. So what I'm trying to do now is give back to the community. I think there are opportunities back at home. And I am trying to take some space in food market in terms of just the way people buy food, how they get food home. So we registered a company. We're working with one of the supermarkets. We're actually going live by end of this month. So we're trying to be able to enable people to be able to give convenience to people to buy food. But at the same time, one of the, I think, is the largest contribution is to be able to whatever profits we make, most of it, we wanted to stay back in Zambia. Yeah.
That's wonderful. And I know you're also working with something with the arts as well, with children. Can you just tell us more about that?
So I also have registered a nonprofit. It's purely based on, focused on the arts and science, and the focus is on Zambia. So what we're doing, we're working with a foundation that is focused on funding education. It's a youth nonprofit. It's a foundation, sorry. So the nonprofit that I've registered, okay, let me explain. So in the US, the people that have got money, they put them, the millionaires and billionaires, they put their money in the foundations. Foundations then give money to the nonprofits. The nonprofit has to be US registered. For those people, I know they have Zambians who have nonprofits. I would suggest don't go start raising money from Zambians. If you're a nonprofit, go and get the money from the foundations. They're there. If I ask a foundation for $500,000, $1 million, they can give it to you. If they give it to you, you can then make meaningful impact in Zambia. If you run your NGO, your nonprofit in Zambia, you can't get money from a foundation, U.S. foundation. It doesn't work that way. They only put money in the U.S. nonprofits. So if you run an NGO or whatever, a nonprofit in Zambia, try and find a way to get it registered in the U.S. because you can get all the money directly. Okay? Maybe one example is the way the USAID funds organizations. Those organizations working in Zambia, they're intermediaries. They're middlemen and women. If you were to get money direct from the USAID, for example, they might give you $5 million. But if you work with through an intermediary, the intermediary, of course, has to do the accommodation, their management and stuff. By the time you get the money, you get a lot less. So the most effective way to help people in Zambia is register a nonprofit, which is what we've done. It's for the arts and science. I'm already working with one of the schools in Lusaka, the Adrian Mungando Boys International College. Then also we're working with Loyola Productions to run an animation academy. So I'm not good at arts myself, but I think we can still contribute in areas where we feel passionate that there are people that need help and some financing.
Wow, that is wonderful. That is a lot of great stuff. Okay, so one final question before I leave. When you miss Zambian food and you're in New York, where do you go and what do you do?
Okay. For that one, in our basement, in our freezer, deep freezer, and elsewhere, you always find, I go into a freezer. I go and find, lo and behold, I found a meda worth of finkovala last month. Yes, in the freezer. It's good. I don't like siavonga. I like mpulunga benta. You have all those, dried vegetables. We have chihuahua. We have all those. We have fish. So, you know, our freezer always have something. So whenever I need to eat Zambian food, I, of course, it's got to freezer, dig out some delicacy. And by the way, I eat in Shima every day, as every day, even at lunch today and yesterday. Exactly.
So. Wonderful. Well, this has really been good. You've given us some great information. We are so happy to have you here. And thank you for agreeing to come and share this information with us. And we hope that you will come back, especially when we go to video maybe next year, because I'm sure people want to see you.
All right. I'll be glad to.
All right, people. Until the next episode, it is goodbye and thank you. Don't forget to rate, like, and subscribe from wherever you get your podcast from. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.